Welcome to Comic Talk Today for Thursday, November 29th, 2018. I'm trying something new today. I carved out some time. I want to get back on a roll, keep these podcasts going. You know, I like 2 weeks ago, I was like, I'm going to do like this every other day thing. But sometimes I just feel like recording all the time. So I'm recording once again. And as promised yesterday, I'm doing a Throwback Thursday. This is something that I've kind of hinted at doing for quite a while. And the more I read into these older books, the more I want to do them. So at least for the next few weeks, I think I'm going to do a Throwback Thursday, probably on the Ultraverse. And actually, that's what we're kicking off today. We're doing Throwback Thursday, diving into the Ultraverse. I'm going to be talking about three books that came out, I believe, July 1993. We'll be talking about The Strangers number one, Hard Case number one, and my favorite Ultraverse book, Prime number one. Not like single issue, but like the whole series. I love that series. And we'll get to why in a second. And you're asking to yourself, like, why are you doing this kind of thing, this Throwback Thursday thing? And now there's a reason for that. I've got a ton of comics that I haven't read in a long time. In fact, the majority of the Ultraverse I have not read since they were first coming out. The only Ultraverse series that I've reread since is Prime for sure. I think I may have reread Prototype once and Ultra Force. I've reread once. But outside of that, I haven't reread most of these since, I don't even know when they quit publishing, 95, 6, 7, something like that. And I want to get back into these because Ultraverse is one of those sadly, dead universes that I really enjoyed. There's quite a few dead universes that I love. One is Valiant, and you're thinking to yourself, Valiant's still publishing? Yes, but it's not the same as it was back then. And the Ultraverse is another one. CrossGen is one that I really, really loved as well. And the final one is Milestone. So for at least for the foreseeable future, I'm going to be concentrating on those four on these Throwback Thursday episodes. I don't know if I'm going to be mixing and matching, or if I'll just go, you know, through the Ultraverse stuff first and then go to CrossGen and do it that way. I haven't decided yet, but I want to reread some of these older things that I own and I haven't read in a while. And, I do have a full reading collection of Ultraverse books. I don't care too much about variant covers and things like that. But in terms of reading collection, I do have a full reading collection of this. I'm actually going to be using a chronological list that I found on some Marvel forum, because Marvel does own the Malibu properties. We'll get to that in a few minutes. And I found a chronological reading list, and so I'm going to be reading them in that order. I just don't know if I'm going to do like mix and match issues of Ultraverse on these things, or if I'm just going to pick a couple series and do like, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 issues at a time. We'll see. I definitely want to do that with Prime, so there may be just like a Throwback Thursday Prime next week. But for today, we're going to mix and match. And the reason for that is, I think, because these are the first three books to come out of the Ultraverse, they're going to be a good sampling of what the Ultraverse has to offer. Not everything, but it does have quite a bit, and it does introduce you to many of the characters that show up in the Ultraverse. And if you don't know what the hell the Ultraverse is and why you should care, then I'm going to tell you. For those of you that are, you know, have been reading comics for a long time, may remember the Ultraverse. I know I had a very fond liking of these characters back then. Again, in particular, Prime. And it, from what I've reread so far, I've gotten through quite a few. I've read probably about 40, 45 issues. Just mix and match of stuff since I've been planning on doing this of Ultraverse books. And Prime is still my favorite one. So I can't wait to talk about that book in particular. All right, let's talk about the Ultraverse. And if you're like an Ultraverse scholar listening to this, because I know the Ultraverse fans, the Malibu fans, are kind of, they're still around. I think part of the reason for that is the way that the company kind of dissolved, but the creators are still somewhat involved in like fan discussions. There's still very many fans that love these books. So if I get any facts on the story of the Ultraverse, then I apologize in advance. You can feel free to send me your hate comments on Twitter at Geekvine, or you can send me hate mail, yell at comictalk.today. That's the email address. And I'm doing all this by memory, so if I get, like, names wrong or whatever, then, of course, I apologize. But Ultraverse is actually really interesting. It's part of a larger company. It was being published by Malibu, first premiering June or July of 1993, and again, premiering with these three books, The Strangers, Hard Case, and Prime. And the thing about the Ultraverse that was really cool is that they brought in a lot of big names to do their work. And Malibu had been around for a while. I think Malibu came around in like 85, 86, and they were doing various different, like, books of their own. They're also publishing books for other folks. I believe the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were being put out by Malibu for a little while. And actually, they were very instrumental in the publication of Image titles when Image came around. Because, you know, when these guys left Marvel and DC to form Image Comics, they didn't really have a distribution method. And they approached the Malibu folks, and Malibu was more than happy to help them put these books out. So at least in the early days, Malibu was the one publishing Image books. And that's really interesting, right? Because now Image has kind of become this distribution arm for a lot of indie creators. And really, the books that they came out with originally aren't really around anymore. I mean, some have come back, right? Like Top Cow's doing Cyberforce again, Witchblade. There's a Darkness series coming out next year, which I cannot wait for. Darkness was one of my favorite books when it was coming out at the time. In particular, the first few arcs. I think after issue like 20 or 25, it kind of started going downhill a little bit. But even throughout, there's been a lot of really good stories in that. And Witchblade was another one, and those two are connected. But aside from that, I mean, there's a Youngblood book that was coming out that was really good, but not really anything like the original Youngblood comic that Rob Liefeld put out. Aside from that, there's quite a bit that just isn't around anymore, right? While reading some of these Ultraverse comics, there are ads for Image titles, for example. And, you know, things like Wetworks or, Trencher. What else is on there? I can't remember. There were a bunch of different ones. And some aren't even at Image anymore, right? Like the Wildcats universe, the Jim Lee stuff. That's over at DC now. And it's great, by the way. Great. I mean, I talk about those books all the time. Authority being one of my favorite all-time books, by the way. Planetary as well. Anyway, so Image was just coming in. They needed a distribution arm. They approached the Malibu folks. Malibu's like, yeah, we'll put your books out for you. So as a result, as you all know, if you know anything about comics, Image was gigantic when it premiered. Gigantic. There were people lining up around the corner of comic shops for, like, I don't want to say miles, but for some stores, it probably was miles. I mean, if you watch the, what's the documentary called? Image Revolution. Go watch that. I believe it's on Amazon Prime for free. I could be mistaken. I do own it, so I don't remember where it is streaming for free, but I think at one point somebody was streaming it for free, and it's fantastic. Maybe it was Hulu. Fantastic documentary. You can see all that in there. And as a result, because Malibu was putting out these books for, Malibu made a ton of money of Image Comics, and they decided they wanted to expand their line. And one of the things that they did to expand this line is create the Ultraverse. Started planning, I think, in 92, so, you know, pretty much immediately after Image launched, and that cash infusion was really great for them. And they approached a large group of creators that are like well-known creators. And, you know, I'll get to some of these when I talk about the books, but you had like Mike W. Barr, Steve Englehart, Steve Gerber, Gerard Jones, James Robinson, Norm Brayfogle, like tons of folks in there that people recognize from their work elsewhere. And all this was kind of spearheaded, I guess. It's I don't know if I want to say spearheaded, but maybe partially masterminded. God, is that even, like, more credit to the guy? Larry Niven, the guy that did the Ringworld series, classic sci-fi fantasy series of books. And I believe Larry's gone. I think Larry passed away a few years ago. But, I mean, really fantastic sci-fi author. And he was kind of tapped with creating an origin, a background for the characters that would become the Ultras. And, you know, you have to have a name. They couldn't call them mutants, right? They couldn't call them, what does DC call them? Who cares? So they called them Ultras. And, that's kind of why you have the Ultraverse. And originally that wasn't going to be the case. The original name for the universe was the Megaverse. And I guess there was some kind of rights issues and they had to rename it into Ultraverse. And, it launched with these three books in July of 93 and it was gangbuster sales hit. Yeah, a couple weeks ago when I started reading these books again, I posted an image on Twitter, I believe it was. I mean, it wasn't an image. It was a link to a YouTube video. I'll see if I remember, I'll put it in the show notes so you can watch it. But Malibu was putting out, like, commercials on MTV and the Sci-Fi Channel and those kind of places advertising these comics. And you've got to watch them. If you grew up in the era, you may remember. You may also remember how terrible the 90s were in terms of fashion and slang. But, it is 1000% 1993, these commercials. And, they're kind of horrifying to watch, to be honest, because I grew up in that era, right? I mean, I was born in 81, so in the early 90s, I was old enough to start getting into this kind of stuff. And, God, it was terrible. Like neon green skateboards and terrible t-shirts and awful sunglasses. I'll put a link in the show notes if I remember. But, go watch these commercials. And of course, they were doing print ads as well. And the print ads were, a little more indicative of what it was that you were getting into. The commercials were more like, dude riding a skateboard, explosions, explosions. And, that was the thing back in the 90s. So, very successful marketing campaign all over different types of media. The books were a gangbuster sales hit everywhere across the line. And the great thing about the Ultraverse is that not only could you go to a comic shop and get them, but you can go to a newsstand and get them. And we don't really have a newsstand market anymore. I think the last remnants really of newsstand were Toys R Us, rest in peace. And, you know, we have some stuff over at like Walmart, for example, but, there's not really a newsstand market anymore. And newsstand is where I got my start into comics, right? I've talked about this little Korean deli that I used to go to, on the corner near my house, and he had a ton of books. Ton of books. Unfortunately, when he died and his son took over the business, he didn't have as many comics. But I mean, that's where I got my start, right? And that's, you know, when he passed away, that's when I found my first comic shop because I wanted more comics. Ultraverse, you could find them anywhere, and it was awesome. And then in like 94, 95-ish. We'll say 95. I could be wrong. So one of you Ultraverse fans, or Ultraverse fans, correct me. Marvel ended up buying the company for particular, very different reasons. The most accepted reason is in order to purchase their coloring department. Malibu and Ultraverse had the most high-tech coloring department of any comics company at the time. And so that's generally the reason given for why they were purchased. I don't believe it's actually necessarily the case. It might be partially the case, but I think there's definitely a lot more going on. And this episode is not really about the history of Malibu. If you want to hear me do like a history of Malibu, I would love to. I used to do like a comic history deep dive podcast. It was just a lot of work and I had to quit doing it. But I would love to do an episode on this. So let me know, either on Twitter or email and, we'll see if we can work that out for you. But, you know, Malibu was doing digital coloring and this is one of the first companies doing digital coloring and they were really, really good at it, very efficient at it. And of course now everybody does digital coloring, right? But back then people were using like pens and pencils and everything was done by hand and it took forever. And with digital coloring, you didn't really have that. And I mean, if you look at videos of digital coloring now, it's even more advanced, right? I mean, you can do some crazy things with digital coloring in just a few minutes that would take hours sometimes or days back, even at this time in the early 90s, early to mid 90s. So the reason given was kind of that, but there was a lot more than that because at this time, Marvel was really struggling. Marvel was, in bankruptcy around this era. They weren't selling a lot of comics. And with the success of Malibu, they thought, we'll bring these guys in, we'll get that sales bump, and we'll just say it's the coloring is fantastic, that's why we want them. But really there was a lot more than that. And the other thing is that at this time DC was kind of in talks of buying Malibu. Matter of fact, that whole era of comics is interesting because Like DC almost bought Marvel at one point. I think in the past, Marvel almost bought DC at one point, and it was a very cutthroat era for many different reasons, right? People were leaving those companies and starting their own thing. This is kind of maybe the golden age of creator-owned comics, I would say, partially fueled by the departure of those folks and into forming Image. But as a result, Marvel ended up buying them. They quit distributing Malibu Comics on the newsstand, which of course led to a large sales dump, because a large chunk of their sales were coming up from the newsstand and not from comic book shops necessarily. They also increased the price of the books from $1.95 to $2.50, so that kind of got some people a little weary, which I find interesting because like Valiant did really well, and Valiant was probably the most expensive books on the newsstands at the time. I mean, you were spending $2.50, $3, $3.50 for Valiant Comics, and they did very well. But, you know, when Marvel kind of purchased the company, things really started going downhill. They did a couple of crossover events that brought in some Marvel characters into the Malibu universe. You had some Malibu characters going into the Marvel universe. And let me see, what do we have? We had like Juggernaut was in the Ultra Force, if I'm not mistaken. So was Black Knight. But the Black Knight thing is weird. You know what? I need to do like a Secret Origins of Black Knight, because that character is ridiculously fascinating. And he doesn't get enough love. Well, you know what? We're going to do that. I'm going to put that on the books right now. Secret Origins Black Knight at some point in the near future. Who else was on there? What was that book? Elven? Is that right? We'll go with that. It's probably not right. But Elven came over and I think was in the MCU for a while, maybe in Avengers, just kind of like as a side character, not as a member of the Avengers. Spider-Man and Prime kind of crossed over on this thing, and Prime gained his final transformation, his final, not really suit, the Spider-Prime. Which I loved. I still love Spider-Prime. And actually, in Spider-Verse a few years ago, there was a little image of Spider-Prime in like a left-hand corner of a panel, and some old-school Ultraverse fans were kind of freaking out. For some reason, Marvel will not do anything with these characters, though. They've talked about bringing this line back. I think in 05, Joe Quesada said he was going to bring back. They're working on bringing back the Ultraverse. That never happened, and nobody really talks about it anymore. There's a lot of bad blood between creators working in Malibu when the company first started and now and Marvel Comics. So I think because of the rights situation for some of these, and that's something that's never been spoken about because I'm assuming NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, we'll probably never see these characters again. But you know what? We can read the old books, and that's what we're going to do right now because I love me some Ultraverse. So, of the three that we're going to talk about tonight, The Strangers is probably my least favorite, and I think part of the reason for that is it is the one that has aged least well. Is that a phrase? We just made it up. It has not aged as well as some of these other books. A lot of that having to do with language, for example, like the use of Wild Thang, which, of course, was a big song in the early 90s, but, you know, like, come on. The fashion's definitely more outdated, and obviously more outdated than this one. And there's a lot of talking points, and because you have such a large cast of characters, it can be a little difficult to read sometimes. But you know what? Part of that is Steve Englehart, who is the writer of this book. So if you're an Englehart fan, you might still love this. Pencils, Rick Hoberg. Letters by Tim Eldred. Inks by Tim Burgard. And colors by Paul Mounce. So really interesting. The reason we're going to start with this is this kind of tells you how the Ultraverse sort of comes to be. Because you have this group of people riding a rail car in San Francisco. They get hit by lightning and learn that they have superpowers. That's kind of the gist of the whole thing. Now, the characters in the Strangers team, there's quite a few. There's Electrocute, who is an android that kind of gains consciousness through this event, this electrocution. It's called the Jumpstart. So from now on, I'll refer as the Jumpstart. She is an android, but gains sentience, and actually she was a sex bot for a billionaire who is also on the train car and becomes one of the villains of the series. So does his son eventually, by the way. We have Adam Bomb, which they should have just called him Adam Bomb, but whatever. Adam Bob is an art student who can rearrange matter and molecules at the atomic level. We have Grenade, who is a friend of Bob's and gains the ability to fire explosive blasts. Lady Killer is a fashion designer. She's my least favorite character, by the way, because all her dialogue lines are about how awesome her fashion designs are. Fashion designer with a tracking ability, and whatever she aims at, she will hit. So that's kind of a cool ability. Spectral has the ability to change into different colored flames, and that sounds kind of dumb, but it's actually pretty cool, because each flame is a different power. So this is kind of like the Green Lantern thing. And, you know, I wonder if Geoff Johns, like, kind of took this from Spectral. You have red, which is enhanced strength and aggression. Orange, fire manipulation. Yellow is flight. Green is healing and plant manipulation. Blue is water manipulation and abilities to breathe in the water. Indigo is the space vacuum survival. Violet is protection. And then you have Ariel, who is not part of the team in the first issue, but reluctantly joins in the second. And Zip-Zap, who is kind of like, not Impulse, kind of like Static Shock, except with super speed. And kind of cool. So, all right, so those are the teams. And all these people are on this rail car, right? And they don't know that this lightning blast has given them abilities. And much of the issue takes place with us kind of learning about these people individually and how they realize that they have powers. Right, so like the sex bot girl looked cute. She's getting kind of harassed by some of the people that work for J.D. Hunt trying to bring her back. She gets cut up on her arm, and that's when she sees the wires in there. So she learns she's a robot through this action. But had this jumpstart event not happened, she wouldn't know, because the jumpstart gave her the ability to have consciousness. Right, so she was a robot, and now she's kind of an AI. But she looks very much like a voluptuous comic book woman of the 90s. And her ability is to shoot these lightning bolts out of her arm. Eventually, she kind of has a relationship with another character on the team. But for right now, that's not the case. And actually, that's pretty funny, because he hits on her in this issue. But of course, he doesn't know she's a robot. And I find that interesting, because I don't remember a lot of this kind of human-robot relationship talk happening before, I would say, maybe even just the last 10 years in popular fiction. So pretty ahead of its time, I would say. And just the fact that, like, they have to describe what an android is when she pops up, I thought was really interesting. Because I think even in, like, the early 90s, you know, tech was very new back then, right? I mean, we'd had the internet for not very long at this point, just a few years. You wouldn't have, like, mass adoption internet, I would say, till at least, like, 97, maybe, even later. Cell phones were kind of a thing, but there was, I mean, there were flip phones with monochromatic screens. So it's fascinating to go back and read some of these stories, because they have to explain a lot of the tech that now we take for granted. So I thought that was cool. Grenade and Adam Bob, of course, are, like, good friends. And, you know, when you first meet them, you think that maybe they're going to become criminals, because they find these powers they have, and they're like, we're going to be billionaires. And you're like, oh man, are these guys going to become, like, armed robbers or, like, kidnappers or whatever? But no, they end up joining the team, and I'll talk about how they join the team. So throughout all these little vignettes that we get for each character, where we learn who they are and how they learn that they have abilities, there's also a cloud up in the sky. And this line is reiterated like 3 or 4 times in the issue, how it never rains in June. So the fact that there's a cloud in the sky is weird, in particular the fact that there's no wind and the cloud is moving. And as it turns out, this cloud is a magical floating city. We learn more about it in the second issue of the book. And there's a race of magical alien-type beings that live there, and they're kind of watching all these jumpstart events around the world. The jumpstart events being the events that give people abilities. And we don't really, like, know why yet, but we learn that there's this thing called the Entity on the Moon that's kind of making these things happen. And it's kind of like a crash-landed ship on the moon, if I'm not mistaken. Kind of cool. So these guys are kind of, like, watching over. And one of these beings comes down. Her name is Ariel. She ends up joining the team. She is a sorceress from this magical flying city. And, you know, she's trying to see what the hell's going on. of course, she doesn't speak English, so there's a language barrier. And she's obviously not from this Earth, right? She's wearing this crazy costume with jewels, and, you know, she's got magical abilities. She can fly. And, you know, when these people are kind of gathering together to determine what the hell happened to them in the rail car, that's when Ariel comes down. And they're like, well, she must know something about this. So they start asking her questions, and, you know, they're angry. They don't know what the hell's going on. So she kind of thinks she's being attacked. She attacks them. They go back and forth. That's kind of how they form this team of strangers. And, of course, the strangers, because they didn't know each other before this rail car incident. And, they're fighting each other. They learn exactly what their abilities are. They learn, kind of side effects of some of these abilities as this fight goes on. And, they decide after Ariel leaves that they need to go and to this magical flying city and, try to figure out what the hell's going on. Cause this woman knows something, right? And she does. And we'll learn about that in issue two. And of course they use Lady Killer's, private jet, because, I mean, she's a fashion designer with tons of money. So of course she's got a private jet. Matter of fact, funny enough, she designs all their outfits as well. And you do see a sketch of one of the outfits in this one. I think it was Adam Bob's costume design. But that was kind of cool. Again, she's my least favorite character because all she talks about is fashion, and I'm not a fashion guy. But really interesting book. It's I think a little more difficult to read through because, number one, it's very word-heavy, but number two, there's a lot of background information that's given in a very straightforward way, whereas I think Hard Case and Prime do things a little bit differently. And as a result, this was one of my least favorite of the bunch, but still enjoyable and very important to read to kind of understand how people are getting powers. As a side effect too, by the way, when the jumpstart event happens, the rail car hits a car. There's a guy driving a car. It hits it. The guy dies. He gets impaled by a metal shard in his brain. And you'd see that very, very vividly. And that character is actually very important. That is a character that becomes the Nightman. And, you know, if you remember watching TV in like 97, 98, there was a Nightman TV show. I think at the time it was UPN. So what became WB, which became the CW. And, I really enjoyed the Nightman TV show. I mean, it was not good, but I really enjoyed it. And, so that was kind of cool to see in there. Of course, you know, first reading this, you wouldn't know that, right? In 93, you wouldn't know that. If you never read these characters, you wouldn't know that. But, you know, you learn a little bit more as you progress into the Ultraverse. But, really interesting stuff on the Strange number one. And, let's talk about Hard Case. Hard Case is, a much different book because number one, it's a solo book. It's not a team book. So you're able to learn a lot more about this character than you would in The Strangers. And Hard Case follows Tom Hawk, who is just a guy down on his luck. He gets hit by one of these jumpstart events, and he becomes Hard Case. In fact, he and his group get hit by this jumpstart event. So there's a team of folks that he used to run with called the Squad. And the Squad is no longer around, and, you know, we learn in the first few pages what happens. The Squad is fighting this being that looks like a robotic version of the Xenomorph from Aliens, except with, you know, machine guns for arms because we're in the 90s. And one of the teammates sacrifices his own life in order to save Hard Case and his fiance. And, of course, the team is dissolved. The fiance is in a coma state for ever since this event. So the book picks up roughly 6 months or so after the events of the first couple of pages, this final fight of the Squad. And Tom Hawk is an actor. He's doing action movies because, I mean, he was a superhero and he doesn't want to fight crime anymore. So he becomes an actor and becomes a very famous and popular action star. But of course, people still remember him from being an Ultra, right? Being part of the Squad. And so he gets autographs from people for multiple reasons. As this is happening, he's filming one of these movies, and he starts hearing about this bank robbery, right? Because he still has his abilities, right? So he's super strong. He can, like, jump a mile. He's nearly invulnerable. He's got super hearing, super sight. And he hears this bank robbery, and he's like, this sounds kind of weird. But he keeps doing his acting thing, and then he really starts hearing, like, people in pain. He's like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I need to go see what's going on. He goes to this bank, and we meet Head Knocker, who is a terrible named character with a terrible character design. He looks like a giant muscular version of, you remember the troll dolls from the, what is it, the 80s? He looks like that, but gigantically muscular with an anarchy symbol on his forehead. And they duke it out. And Hardcase decides, as a result of this battle with Headknocker, that he's going to start fighting crime again. And it's a whole big story in the news, and kind of cool. So a lot more straightforward storytelling, a lot easier to read, I think, as well. But you still get a lot of this background, right? I mean, just the simple introduction of the squad on the first few pages, I think gives you enough to know about why this guy quit fighting crime, why he changed his career, and a lot about who he is, right, personally, and the demons he needs to struggle as a result of getting these abilities. So, pretty cool to see. And, the squad is actually referenced in The Strangers Number One, even though the event of The Strangers Number One happens 6 months after. So at the same time as the first issue of Hardcase, it's still referenced in there, and I thought that was cool because the Ultraverse does a really good job with continuity as well. And I think that's something that's important in this book. Did I even read who the creative team is on this? I don't think I did. The creative team for this book is James Hudnall on writing, Jim Callahan on pencils, Norm Breyfogle on inks, and Tim Eldred on letters. All right, let's go to Prime. Prime is my favorite. Number one, it's written by Liz Trzaskowski and Gerard Jones. Fantastic folks. The art is by Norm Breyfogle, whom I, of course, absolutely adore. Letters by Tim Eldred, Paul Mounts on color design. And this is a story, but no, we're not going to do that now. This is a story about a kid with abilities. And we don't know that immediately, but you kind of see that at the end of the book. When the book opens up, you see Prime, who is this you could say Superman analog. I would say more like a Captain Marvel analog, a Shazam analog. In particular, once you learn that he's a kid with these abilities and kind of the way the abilities work, it's not really magical. But, you know, it's a kid who is able to summon himself as this giant superhero type guy. And, based, you know, his powers and his look are kind of based on his ideal of superhero. He's a kid that reads comics. He watches action movies. So, you know, his ideal superhero is this guy who is gigantic and muscular with armor and a cape and, you know, has ideals, right? Follows the Prime Directive. That's kind of where he gets his name, Prime. So when the book opens up, you have this ginormously angry-looking superhero guy holding what appears to be a high school coach. I mean, you can just assume because he's got a whistle around his neck and a junior high school t-shirt. And he says, "I'm Prime, you pervert, and Prime is going to make you pay." And he's like beating the crap out of this dude, right? And as it turns out, this coach appears to be a child molester. They never show any of this. They don't explicitly have anybody saying they were molested. They don't necessarily show anything in the shadows. But obviously, it's obvious that Prime knows that something is going on, right? And he's like, "Coach, you're a pervert. I saw you on the basketball court in fifth period touching those girls." And the coach is trying to fight back, but I mean, it's Prime. He's super powered and he can't really do anything. He ends up putting the guy in a wheelchair. And so this is where we pick up to learn a little bit more about Prime. I think the way that the writers chose to tell the backstory of Prime is really interesting because it's not through Prime himself, even though you have these vignettes throughout the story. There's three different stories in this issue that show you like what he can do and what he's about, what his ideals are. You learn a lot about him through these interviews that are going on in the background. So the government is, of course, very interested in finding more about the Ultras, what their abilities are, what their weaknesses are, so they're able to stop them if need be. And so, you know, Prime is very interesting to them because he's so kind of overpowered. And so they're bringing in folks that have had dealings with Prime. And the first one is this coach. So they're interviewing the coach. And he's like, "Well, I'm not a pervert." He's like, "Maybe he's the pervert because, like, maybe I seen the girls' basketball team gave him a hard-on, and he didn't like the fact that I was coaching him or whatever." And he, you know, starts giving information about Prime, his interaction with him, and all this stuff. And, you know, they're paying people for these interviews. And so you have these two voices kind of in the background. You don't see them. You just see the coach. And the coach, like, tells a story, and he's like, "Can I go now?" And they're like, "Yeah, Where do I get paid? You know, just ask the secretary and she'll give you the money as you leave. And he's like, okay, cool. And so you hear the voices talking in the background. I can't believe you're going to let the scumbag, like, take the money for the interviews. And the guy's like, look, we offer money for the interviews. And don't worry, he's not going to be a pervert anymore, because while he was sitting in this chair, we were bombarding him with radiation beams. So not only is he not going to be a pervert anymore, he's going to have no sexual urge of any sort. And, you know, they call him the next witness. And the next witness is a drug dealer who's also been beat up by Prime. And we learn his story. So Prime just kind of like dives headfirst through the roof and says, hey, no more crack in this area. Quit dealing drugs. And the guy's like, who the hell are you? I'm like, I run this place. So they start shooting at him. Of course, the bullets don't do anything to Prime. But he does have some, like, slimy looking thing coming out of him, and he's like, I don't know what the hell's going on, but he starts using his abilities. We learn about this like thunderclap thing he does, where he just like claps his hands in front of him and it sends a shockwave out, so that knocks out most of this drug dealer's guys. They try to shoot flames at him, that does nothing, and the guy gets beat up. He starts spinning in the house and the house like blows up, and he's like, I have to wear this freaking neck collar, like, what am I gonna do? They're asking him questions about his interaction with Prime, and he reveals that around his neck he's got a little vial of some of this fluid that came off of Prime when after they shot him. And of course he reveals it's really funny. He talks about like all these like the insurance company being criminals because they're making him wear this thing, and his lawyer is a criminal, and this, that, and the other. Like, these people are criminals. And then he talks about like, I always keep a keepsake from people that I let my people discipline, right? Like ears and stuff. But for Prime, he's got this little vial of fluid. And the guy's like, the interviewer's like, yeah, I'll pay you. I'll pay extra for that. And he's like, $5,000? He's like, yep. He's like, all right, how about $10,000? And they end up killing the guy. They're like, you're a freaking scumbag. We don't operate this way. But I have the authority to do whatever we want with my investigation, because I'm the government. I'm here to help you. So that was kind of cool. We learn kind of the interaction here. Then we cut off to some like news reports where we learn about some of the other metahumans or ultras in this place. There's like an Ultra magazine as well. We meet Prototype. We see Hardcase in here as well. So those are characters that, I mean, we've seen Hardcase. We haven't seen Prototype yet, but that's going to be one of the main characters here as well. And then we see that that Prime has gone off to Somalia to fight the Somali civil war over there, and stop some of these guys. And as a result of this battle, he gets hit by a bunch of tank shells, has huge holes around them, and starts realizing he's losing his powers. And these people in the government watching the news report are like, he doesn't know what he is or how his powers work. It's pretty obvious. So he ends up flying back home after this battle with the Somali soldiers, and crashes through this building. And then we start seeing how he's not this ginormous guy. His body starts melting away. Some fantastic panels, by the way. You see him kind of in pain. He doesn't know what the hell's happening. And of course, he has to break out of this sludge shell around him, or he'll suffocate. And so that's when he comes out and he kind of passes out. And that's the end of the first issue. Fantastic art. Fantastic coloring. Really great story. I love how it connects to a lot of other things in the Ultraverse as well. And again, Prime is my favorite, and I think for an obvious reason. I think just the character himself is fantastic. And once we learn a little bit more about him, he becomes even more interesting, because we learn that he's just a little kid with this ability to form a shell around himself. And I think that's a pretty damn cool power too. So really awesome having read these books. I'm going to be talking a lot more about the Ultraverse and some other books as well. But if you get a chance, you can find all of these books in a quarter bin, guaranteed. In fact, when I purchased the majority of my collection, I did most of it at my local comic shop when they were doing like, I don't even know what it was, like buy three, get three free or something. And I found like long boxes of just Ultraverse stuff, and that's where I got my Stormwatch collection from, my Wildcats collection. I bought a bunch of stuff there. I spent like $50 and got like four long boxes full of crap. It was awesome. So definitely recommend you check some of these out, in particular Prime. If you have read Ultraverse before, let me know what you thought about it. If you've reread it since, if you never have, I want to know if you want to check it out. Of course, I will talk about Prime a little bit more next week, and I guess maybe I'll do a deep dive on, we'll see how many issues. But that'll be coming next week on Throwback Thursday. That's going to wrap up this episode, though. Thank you all for listening. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at Geekvine. You can email yell@comictalk.today. I'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. I'll catch you then.